Welcome to How Now, the podcast where we talk about how to live in the now. And here's your host, Kim Martin Raymond.
And blessings, and welcome to this edition of the How Now podcast, where we talk about how to live in the now. I am your host, Kim Martin Raymond. I am a minister, spiritual life coach, spiritual health and wellness awareness coach, and I am author and founder of Redefining You LLC, where I help my clients to realign themselves mind, body, and spirit. And if this is your first time joining us on the How Now podcast, welcome to the show. We are in season 3 and going strong, and happy that you have decided to come and spend this time with us as we talk about topics that are happening in the now. So make sure you go to my website, www.hownowpodcast.com. Click on your favorite podcast platform, like, follow, share, and subscribe, or you can subscribe to my How Now YouTube channel, where you can find out what's been going on our past episodes in the now and find out what we're going to be doing moving forward. So again, that's www.hownowpodcast.com. Okay, so let's hop into today's show, where we're going to be talking about moving from stress to strength and what emotional intelligence plays in that process. You know, we've gone through a lot through this pandemic. Some people have gone beyond the pandemic. They feel as though, okay, I'm over it. You know, I'm ready to just go back to quote unquote normal. And we know that, you know, there have been plenty of pivots that had to be made in our lives over these last couple of years. And there are still some people who are still living with the residual effects of this pandemic, because, you know, it's not over for some of us. Some of us are still in that space and we're learning to navigate in it. You know, and emotional intelligence has something to do with that, and levels of stress have been heightened as a result of it. So to help me to go through a little bit of the weeds of that is my beautiful guest, and as is customary with the How Now podcast, I'm going to have her to introduce herself at this time.
Hi there, Kim, and thank you for having me on this show. And after that long introduction, I'm thinking, how can I possibly follow that, Kim? Impossible. But for those of you who don't know me, I am British and my name is Joy Langley. I'm a stress management coach. I'm also a therapist, and I work with people on areas, I suppose, of looking at their emotional intelligence, but I don't call it that, which is why Kim wanted to get me on the show.
That's right. That's why you're here. Just so that we can talk about that, I'm so glad that you are here. And as Joy said, she is joining us from the UK. And so there is a 5-hour time difference for those of you who are not aware of that. You know, time starts there and then it's 5 hours or however many hours from the UK around the world as to how our time differences are. So thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be here with us. We are happy you are here.
So my pleasure.
You know, we're going to be talking about stress because, you know, that's a huge part of everyone's existence right now. You know, levels of stress have been high. And one of the reasons why we have this platform is to talk about being able to cope. And my acronym for COPE is creating our peaceful existence. How can we go about navigating in this new space when things happen to us? And in this instance, things have happened to us. Well, it's happened to everyone at the same time. And there aren't many times in history where we have all experienced something that has affected everyone around the world. It wasn't just a pandemic that hit in one particular area. It touched lives around the world. And so everyone has had to make some changes, has had to make some adjustments, has had to make some pivots. And that's where a lot of the stressors have come in, because people have had to sit with themselves, right? And as they're sitting with themselves and trying to figure out, okay, I may not be pleased with where I am, or I'm not quite sure how to navigate moving forward, then the stress comes up, and, you know, emotional intelligence plays into that as well. So first, let's talk about, you know, where you were prior to the pandemic. Were you doing this type of work prior to the pandemic? And what was your clientele looking like then?
Yes, I was definitely doing this work pre-pandemic, Kim, and I suppose I don't look at life in terms of in terms of that way, because life just keeps moving forward. So there are lots of if you were to draw a timeline of your whole life, you could go along and put down the incidents that jump out and stand out at you. You know, the time I felt before I had my child, or the time before I, you know, had some teeth work when you were talking about teeth, or yes, the time before, you know, my parents passed away. You could definitely plot out your life by putting on significant life events. So I know that your show is about highlighting the pandemic and everything else, but I must admit, Kim, I try not to live in the past. Yeah. I try to keep moving forward. It is a blip on the timeline of events. And yes, it was very, very significant at the time. But because I deal with stress and anxiety and the management of all of that, Kim, that being in that space for me keeps you stuck in the past. So I need people to move out of the past and into the present and then try and take themselves into the future. So, yeah, I don't look at it that way, but it was an amazingly like crazy, sad thing that happened to the world. Yeah. But I was glad, and if I can use the word glad, that it happened to everybody at the same time. And the reason why I say that, Kim, is that there are an awful lot of things that happen in the world that are on the news, and you only have to turn on, you only have to look at your phone to be fed stuff that you don't want to see, or if you turn it on deliberately. But there's so much stuff that happens that you can always say to yourself, oh, that's so terrible, but oh, thank God it's not happening to me. Or not even, thank God it's not happening to me. It's very much, it doesn't hurt. There's no pain felt. There's no empathy. There's no understanding of what's happening to it. So for me, even though I did actually catch COVID in that early period in the March 2020, I still had a sense, and I still have it, that thank God it happened to everybody at the same time, regardless of whether you were rich, poor, fat, thin, black, white, it doesn't matter. Everybody had that impact on them, because it's so easy in this world, Kim, for us to not feel anything for someone else simply because it's not happening to us. So that is the biggest thing that about the whole pandemic and the COVID, you know, virus, and how did it come about, and being stuck at home, and what do you do with yourself? Even I got into that really like anxious worry and fear mode, because that's what uncertainty does for you.
So you said it's been a challenge, and you know, you make some very valid points. You know, things are a blip, you know, along the timelines of our lives, and it's how we you know, address those things. For some people, it was catastrophic. It completely, you know, put the brakes on their lives. They didn't know what to do, you know, and then there were some who was like, okay, we're going to manage. And that's where you have that little circle of uncertainty. I say, you know, you have that period of fear where you had people who were just, everybody was frightened. We didn't know what was happening, what was going on, what are we supposed to do? You know, that's why the show is called How Now, you know, because it was like, not what now, we know what happened, but how now? How do we go beyond this point? And you go from a point of fear, a place of fear, then you go to a place of education. People were going to the CDC and finding out, what do we need to do? How do we need to, you know, what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to wear masks? Are we supposed to wear gloves? How are we supposed to clean? Blah, 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 all of these things. Then you had people that said, okay, what can we do to help? You know, okay, I know what to do. I know how to make a mask. Yeah, people who were making masks and going online and showing people how to make cleansing products and things of that nature. So you had people who reached back and said, okay, we understand what to do. And now we're going to reach back and help those who are still in those spaces of fear.
And I would, you know, like I said, Kim, because I don't like to live in the past. Okay. And even as you're talking, I'm reliving the whole event. And that's the problem with living in the past. You're either going to live there, and if it's a great place, then it makes you happy. or if you live there and it makes you sad, you feel sad right now as you're speaking. So as you're speaking, Kim, it's actually making me feel anxious. And I'm very good at monitoring what's going on for me and what I'm feeling. And I'm thinking, why am I feeling anxious? And it's just an understanding that the brain, whether it's happening to you real time now or it's happening in your imagination, like a dream, your body will create all the necessary sensations that you need to save your life. So your body will respond with the stress response, which is basically going to get you into that fight and flight mode. So you're talking about that. You could be talking about anything that's suddenly making me feel a bit nervous and edgy. And I can feel my body tensing up. I can feel my heart almost like tightening. And I'm thinking, I know what this is. I'm feeling worried now. I'm feeling fearful. And so what I normally do when I'm in that place is I will try and work out, is it real or is it not real? So as you're talking, Kim, I'm really saying to myself, Kim saying that to me is making me feel this. But is that happening right now? And the answer is no, it's not happening right now. So that then calmed me down and I was able then to refocus on what you're saying. But I could feel myself, you know, drifting in and out of, oh my God, that's terrible, that's terrible, that's terrible. You know, like panic, like a panic attack, basically.
Now I'm sure, and I'm glad that you bring this to our attention, because that's probably how your clients were feeling as well, or how some people feel about anything. Like you said, beyond the pandemic, you know, you said you've been doing stress management, and a lot of stressors come from, you know, that's just like you said, the introduction of things. So you can imagine people. I'm not a person who watches the news because I get those same feelings, those anxious feelings, those stressful feelings within the first 5 minutes. I'm like, okay, let me turn this off. It's too much. It's too much.
Me too.
It doesn't mean that I don't, you know, every now and then I plug in because I don't want to be, you know, socially, I don't want to be so aloof that I don't know what's going on in the society, you know, things ever.
You will find out. The thing is, Kim, with the news, okay, and I ducked out of the news a good, it feels like 30 years ago now, just goes to show how old I must be, but I made a decision to avoid all the negativity from the news, because I found in my late 20s that I was just watching, I was actually just getting really overwhelmed, and I called it information overload. Yeah. So I'm an overachiever. I did a lot of studying, and really and truly, I've got a core belief about I must be smart, I have to be smart, all that kind of stuff going on. So that meant being knowing everything. But how can you possibly know everything, Kim? It's impossible. So eventually I found myself wanting to know everything, you know, every bit of news feed, every bit of this, because my main fear, because I always look at people and I think, well, okay, so what's the fear under the fear? What's the thought that's going on, basically? You know, and my main thought is that I need to be smart. I can't be ignorant. I have to know everything. Because if I meet Kim and she starts talking about, you know, the weather in the Bahamas or something, or she starts talking about, you know, something happening in another country, or she starts talking about the economy, I want to be able to answer her. Otherwise, I'm going to look stupid. So I've got this whole dialogue going on in my head, Kim, way before I even met you. And then when you're in front of me, it's carrying on. You can't see it. It's invisible, but it's actually informing everything that we're doing in this moment.
Right.
So the news was just, I decided that I needed to cut the news out because I was getting too overwhelmed and it was becoming debilitating for me. And it was hard at first because you think people are going to like judge you, but no one's judging you because nobody knows. The only person that's judging you is you. And then you get used to the fact that you feel more relaxed. You feel calmer. You think, wow, this is a nice feeling. So it's not that, I mean, that statement, ignorance is bliss.
Mm-hmm.
I think there probably is some truth in that, because I must admit, cutting out all news, and I call it everybody else's news because it's not balanced news. This is curated by someone. This is pulled together by someone.
Absolutely.
Okay, and put in front of you, like giving you a meal. It's the only meal you're going to get for the day. And this is it, Joy. And we've put it together. Mm-hmm. If you tap into that system, you just have to recognize that it's somebody else's like recipe. it's somebody else has pulled all these bits together, and they're not in the business of giving us good news. So once you recognize that too, you say, what do you mean they're not in the business of giving us good news? No, Joy, it's not balanced. It's not balanced. It's for ratings and anything else they can think of. So that's why the news has got more and more and more inflammatory, more and more, you know, stuff on it, which you just wouldn't want to see, because they're trying to grab our attention. So it's the attention economy. The news, unfortunately, is not necessarily unbiased. You know, you can't take it as given. You have to recognize what it is. So that's why I don't tap into the news. Okay. If I want to be wound up by anything, I can just go down the corner shop, I suppose, and someone can wind me up there. I don't have to be wound up in my living room. But I think we're just not used to thinking for ourselves, Kim.
You make a very valid point there as well. And I agree with you 100% with regards to the news. And I feel that way even about, you know, and sorry to say it, it may ruffle a couple of feathers, but even our education system. We have been taught to regurgitate things, and then we're given certifications and awards and merit for being able to regurgitate information that someone has created for us to learn.
That's right, Kim. So that's another whole kettle of fish. And I'm sure you'll get a proper educationalist person on and they'll tell you all about it. But from what I know about it, you know, the world has to, that system of teaching us has to change, because the world has changed. And the academic system, you're quite right, it's about giving us old news. It's about us being educated to a certain level so we can go and work for whoever that person is, that business owner. So it was never created to make us, it was never created for us. Wow. It was created to provide fodder. It was created to provide you know, hands and arms that can do XYZ for you in as part of a process. You're just a cog in a very, very big wheel. But going to go down that pathway, Kim, and we have.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of us will get caught going down that rabbit hole, because that's exactly what happens. I mean, we see these things happening around us. And then, like I said, we have people who are, you know, become stressful or become stressed because of that, because of the demands. Like you said, you know, oh my goodness, is she going to ask me something I don't know, you know? And at the same time, I turn around as a host, I say, well, what if my guest asks me something I don't know? Oh my goodness. So I'm in the same predicament. And you see, and until we have a conversation and begin to you know, learn about each other and have, you know, meaningful conversations with people and actually listen when people are speaking and actually receive, become active listeners and not people who are just preparing answers before the person can even tell us what's going on, that's why it's so important, like you said, for us to live in the now, for us to live in the present, so that we know exactly what's happening right in front of us, not focusing so much on what's behind us, but looking forward to those things that are going on in front of us. But we have to be present. We have to do something right in this space right now, so that that way, you know, we don't get caught in that vacuum.
I think, Kim, it's understanding. I mean, I know that you talk about that your show is called, you know, it's got the word now in it. And so for me, when you say the word now, it immediately makes me think about there's another reference point in terms of time. There's the past. And then there's another reference point in terms of time. And that's the future. So in my head, I've always got three reference points. You know, one that's on the far left, one that's on the far right, and one that's in the middle. So for me, the middle part is the now. That's where me and you live. And the reason why I've come to realize that, you know, however anyone describes that point in the middle of the past and the future, it's because that is where we do create things. It's the point where, you know, the past is history, as they say, and we can't do anything about that. We can't change it. But the future, again, it's unknown. We're not magicians in that we can make it the way that we want it to be. Right. But where we are right now, me and you talking, me and you like perhaps writing something or going off on a holiday and discovering something amazing that we then encourages us to then create an invention that then does XYZ for the world, you know, that is the present moment. So we have to recognize what these moments are that are passing by right now, right this minute. They are the point where we create things, where we make things happen, where we do have some impact on our future. And I think what's happened over time, and even when I was younger, I know that you just didn't feel that you could have any impact. And then you get used to not having an impact. And that's when you become very passive. And if you become passive, then you don't have any control. So when you don't have control, then you can trigger anxiety. And if you're triggering anxiety, you're then getting into stress. So, the whole thing about the, you like to pinpoint that one point in time, which is very recent. Okay, it's three years old now, 2020, isn't it? It's probably happening a little bit before that, but the world didn't know about it. It's just that we just have to know that when things happen that we don't understand, when things that happen that we can't make sense of, when things happen that make us feel we have no control over the situation, me and Kim cannot change this whether we want it or not, the body unfortunately just gets so defeated and so deflated that you go into a slump, which could appear to be a depression because the body's protecting itself. What's the point of me fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting until I've got no energy left? My body just says, let go, Joy. So I let go. And that letting go can sometimes feel like depression, but depression comes about in different ways. But the anxiety, Kim, the anxiety is just about always thinking that there's something about to happen and I don't know what it is. And then once you decide, I don't know what it is, but I think I can have some impact on it, then the anxiety can disappear because it's about your agency. It's about your ability to make something, create some kind of change. So anxiety, you're never going to get rid of it, Kim. You know, it's there for a reason. It's a biochemical thing that's happening in our body. Okay. So as soon as me and you have to do something, Kim, and we're not sure about it, I look at you and you look at me and then you look at, and we do this kind of look at each other, look at, right, until suddenly your face changes and you look like quite relaxed. I think, why does Kim look relaxed? I don't know if I can do this or not. And then I think she must have come up with a solution. So then I relax and I say, Kim, it looks as though you found a solution to this. You say, yes, Joy, I have. And in that moment, all that anxiety just gets washed away. So you have to recognize that what anxiety is, okay, it's about a future thought. It's about you being in your head and having a future thought. And you're either going to decide that it's too big and too unmanageable and you don't have any solutions. So in this present moment now, we'll come back and in our time machine and we'll just be defeated. But if we can look into the future and say, well, I can see that if that happens, then perhaps I'll try this. Then we can be a little bit more relaxed in the now, but people can spend too much time. And I know I'm a very good person at worrying. My mum was a worrier. I was taught to worry. I've probably got medals somewhere. You know, we believe misinformed that worrying about the present, worrying about the future right now and having too many thoughts is going to solve the future. It's like, no, it's not going to solve the future. It's just a very big story. So instead of having like one thought followed by another, before you know it, you've written a book and you're sat here just terrified, terrified. And you have to realize that you've just terrified yourself with your own imagination. So there's a lot to do with thinking and where it leads and the emotions that it triggers, and especially stress. So if we go back to your thought about the pandemic, why were we all stressed? Why was even I stressed? Because I couldn't predict the future anymore. I didn't know what was going to happen. It was very, very like a blank canvas. It was also a lot of high emotion thrown in there. A lot of fear was thrown in. It's not like it was a lot of happiness that was thrown in there. Joy, you're going to keep winning the lottery and then you're going to go on holiday and then you're going to... It's not like it was a happy visualization. It wasn't. It was a very depressing visualization. And then it was very real because people were actually dying. So our biggest fear is about dying, Kim. I mean, you know, I could have died. I did catch it and I was very unwell and I thought I was going to die. So it became a reality for me. So, but it's just putting some of those elements in place, Kim, because I know that I'm trying to teach you not to do that COVID thing anymore. Right. But you know, only because it's anxiety provoking. Mm-hmm. Whereas, positivity is about, I hear what you're going to do about it in the future. I cannot stop a pandemic happening in the future. Doesn't matter how much I think about it. you know, all I can do is, if I want to solve it, I always go back to, well, how can I solve it then if I'm going to think about it? I'll become a scientist who's always on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And if the pandemic of any kind of sort comes back, I will just be on call to solve it, to create an antidote. And that makes me feel so much better just thinking that.
Right. I mean, and that's huge. I mean, and I hope people were taking notes, because you dropped some beautiful nuggets in there, because it is important for us. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's always a matter of having a toolbox that has those things in it that you need for any situation. We all know that when we think about our vehicles, we have a spare tire, we have a tire iron, we have a gas can in the anticipation that something may happen to our vehicle. You know, I'm not going to drive around with the kitchen sink in my trunk, because that's not going to help me with anything that's happening with my car. I'm not going to have a toolbox full of erasers if something happens to the plumbing in my bathroom. I'm going to have a plunger. I'm going to have a wrench. I'm going to have the tools that I need for that. And I think that it's so important that even on a mental, you know, in our mental toolbox, there should be things that we can reach back in and pull out as we need them. And that's going to release some of that anxiety that you were talking about.
Absolutely, you know? Kim. Oh, we're on the same page with this. We are on the same page.
Yeah.
With this.
It's like, and that's the thing. We have to be prepared. And I think sometimes we're not prepared, or sometimes we don't ask for the help that we need. You know, I wasn't born with tools in my house, but I know that there's a store that I can go to that has tools, and somebody there is going to have the knowledge and tell me what tools I need for whatever situation that
Yeah.
So it's a matter of us being in that space of asking for help as well. You know?
I agree with you. Asking for, and I think with the whole, you know, the whole pandemic thing, mm-hmm. you know, as you said, it was a global problem, not just a national problem, which, as I said, I think that's a good thing that it was global, because everybody understood it. And everybody felt that empathy for everyone else. We couldn't just brush it off and say, oh, it's only happening in India. Oh, it's only happening in Jamaica. Oh, it's only happening somewhere where you're not. So you're okay, are you? There are people that are suffering over there. But everybody was suffering at the same time. And it didn't discriminate. It didn't matter whether you were rich or you were poor, which was a very interesting thing for once. And I'm sure a lot of rich people would have, I don't know, found some way of digging a bunker underground, or if it's me, Elon Musk wanting to go out into outer space just to avoid the 1 year while there's this pandemic on the earth. Okay, yes, money is interesting, and then it can get you away from crap. And what people were, I think the people that were suffering the worst were people without money in that respect. But we also saw that money didn't necessarily protect you. So that was a real shock when we live in a world where money is applauded as the God, you know, the savior. So when money couldn't save you, you're thinking, what's the world coming to, Kim? What's the world coming to?
It provided resources, but it didn't provide a cure. There were still people who had plenty of money who lost their lives to COVID, you know, and you know, we talked about empathy, and that was something that saddened me, because there are still some people who have shown such a lack of empathy for something that we all experienced. And I would have thought that the empathy would have been greater. And I was surprised that it wasn't. You know, for some people it was. Some people were empathetic, and that was great. And those are some of those people, like I said, who made masks and people who did things to try to help people to you know, climb out of that vacuum that they were stuck in. I get that. And then there were some who were still kind of like, okay, well, yeah, it's a pandemic, so it's just about me. And I'm going to make sure I protect me and forget about you. I need to save my life.
And in a way, you know, Kim, we were speaking about emotional intelligence. Yeah. That's what we were talking about. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest assumptions that human beings make about another human being is that you're just like me most of the time, apart from you bring the race issues into it. But otherwise, you're just like me. You think like me. You have the same thoughts. You know, you have the same values. You have the same. So human beings will meet somebody else and assume they must be like them. So it's interesting that you said about you assume that someone's going to be empathic. And I'm saying, well, that's because you're empathic, Kim, and you're judging everybody by your standards. So I would meet someone and I'd judge them by my standards. If I thought that people should hold the door open after they'd passed through it for me and someone didn't, my first thought would be, how rude. How rude was that? But they might have been brought up in a culture or a home or an environment where actually you don't hold the door open for someone because, let's give a reason, because it makes the other person feel less than, it makes the other person feel incapable, it demeans the other person. So we always have to understand what the meaning is behind other people's actions. But going back to that emotional intelligence stuff, why were there some people that you came across that were not empathic? I would say, well, perhaps they never were like that. That's their whole character. That's how they're made. Because I won't bring the word psychopath into it, but if we're looking at a degree of kindness and givingness and caringness and whatever, and there's two extremes, of course, people that are extremely caring, people that are not caring, and then we're going to have people in the middle. So I'm always scaling things in my head, Kim, just to remind myself that the world is not fixed. It's not just Joy's way. Of course, it should be Joy's way. I would love it if everybody behaved like me, Kim, but drat, they don't, So there's Joy's way. And at the other end of the scale, there's other people's way. And then there's other degrees along that, where people are a little bit like me, So that's where we go wrong. So empathy, I'm hearing what you're saying there. Why were some people not empathic? Why were some people, it's my way or the highway, or it's every man for himself? Do you know what? They've always been like that.
That's right.
Surprise, surprise.
Right. I mean, and that's why there are just so many factors and so many variations of stress and how people deal with things. There are things that, of course, as I get older, my perspective on certain things have changed. Sometimes my patience is not as long as it used to be when I was younger. There are certain things that I'm less tolerant of that I was more tolerant of when I was younger. There are things that have happened in my life and in my environment that have changed the way I thought about certain things. There are certain aspects of my life where, the cliche, if you know better, do better. You've learned some things and it may have changed your perspective from the way you used to think, and you would hope that you change it for the better. So there are just so many things that can lead to those stressors. And it's so, to me, unique to the person. You may have said, just like we've said, we have all experienced the pandemic, but we've all received it and have done things differently as a result.
Absolutely, absolutely, Kim. I think human beings just have to, the main thing that I always come back to, even with this whole area of emotional intelligence and as a word, does it actually make any sense anymore? And it's just a made up word by another human being, like anything else that human beings have made up. It's a creative way of trying to describe something. And I'm sure that, Daniel Goleman, the person who wrote the book, his heart was in the right place and great. But what's happened since is that with language, I'm a real like with language, Kim, I take it or I leave it. Okay. In that if the language doesn't make sense to me, I will leave it. Because if I have to work out what something means in my head as I'm talking to Kim, like translating it, then that's not a good word. It means I can't grasp an understanding of it. So emotional intelligence, as much as it's probably great for someone who wants to appear to be intelligent to say it, what does it mean?
Right. What does it mean?
What does it mean? What does it mean? So, I remove the languaging in a way that doesn't make sense to me, and I put something else in its place so I can at least explain it to myself. And if I had to explain it to you, Kim, I'd be able to explain it to you. So emotional intelligence for me is just an awareness of, first of all, who you are, what you are, all that kind of stuff. And then you might be able to understand how somebody else is. So and when you read the emotional intelligence sort of criteria, it is that kind of understanding of yourself and knowing your emotions and why you're feeling that way, which is great. But then there's also, unfortunately, that there's an obligation for you to suddenly know the other person. So if I'm with Kim, I'm meant to understand how Kim's feeling and get inside her head. And otherwise, if I can't do that part of the tick box exercise, then I'm just not emotionally intelligent. No, who says I have to understand Kim? Who says I have to read her mind? Please, you know, I just about read my own mind, let alone Kim's.
That's right. But just like you said, we give a label to something so that way, you know, we don't understand what it is. So if we call it something, then that makes it real, you know, or that makes it palatable. We are able to digest it better if we can call it something, you know, just like anything else in this world. How do the names come up for all things? Why is this chair called a chair? Why is
Thank
that?
Thank you, Kim.
Why is this called a microphone?
Somebody exactly.
Up with that word, and we're like, okay, so that's what it is. All right, we're going to run with that.
And we also accept words that are not real. So we'll accept a word like Amazon, or if it's the taxi cabs, Uber. We'll accept really strange words. We'll accept Instagram. We'll accept Facebook. I mean, LinkedIn, these are all the social platforms that's why I mentioned social platforms, not to plug them or anything, but they're made up names, which we then decide in our head we're going to accept because we've given it some meaning. And then we just say it. So I don't mind saying words where I don't have to keep on second guessing. But when I use the word emotion intelligence, and I didn't like the word intelligence being attached to the word emotional initially, I was very, very anti it. I've gotten accustomed to it. But I think I don't like the fact that intelligence is being attached to things like social intelligence, or, you know, cooking intelligence, or plane intelligence, you know, or I don't know, dog intelligence. I mean, it's just a word. And if you were a good marketer, a good branding agency, you get one word and you attach it to another one. They don't even have to match, but the human beings will get used to it. And intelligence for me is too loaded as a word. It triggers me because I am coming from a place of wanting to always strive and be good at things. So you attach the word intelligence to it. Right. And all I can see is the opposite is stupid. Okay, so Joy, if you're not intelligent, you're stupid. So you're either emotionally intelligent, Joy, or you're emotionally stupid. Which one would you like to be? Now, you triggered me again, because I'm just in my phase of like, I have to learn, I must learn, I must get good grades, I must do this, I must pass this. You just put me straight into another part of my life, another part of my timeline. Kim, thank you.
That's where the stress comes right there.
That's where the stress. You can hear how stressed I sound. Right. You can hear how stressed I sound just talking about it, Kim.
I mean, that gave me anxiety right there. Because I'm just like, oh my God. And that's true. It's like, am I emotionally intelligent or am I emotionally stupid? Wait a minute. I can't be something in the middle. I can't be, there's no in between. I mean, it's all or nothing. And I think a lot of us take that mindset when we're talking about, you know, things that are going on. It's either all or nothing. And I'm like, there are so many things that I'm on the fence about. There are so many things that are a gray area for me. And I'm like, okay, so do I not get a passing grade for being in the gray? You know, am I a C or is that an A or B? See, and then
you're either a winner or you're a loser. Right. Sorry, Kim. You've passed or you haven't passed. Okay, Kim. I'm sorry. There is room. Obviously, if we remove the word emotional intelligence for the process that's happening, okay, if I just give it a word that I understand, which is just awareness of me, do I understand me? Do I understand how I think? Do I understand how things have changed? Do I understand how, if I'm around Kim and I want to have her chocolates, do I know how to manipulate her to get it from her? Do I know what to say? Do I, if I take her chocolates without her knowing, do I realize that she might not be happy and she might run after me? You know, am I aware of that? So I'd be aware that you're going to be unhappy. So that is me actually knowing how somebody else might feel. That's that empathy part of it. But I also know that, you know, I'm going to be doing it and I'm either going to make you happy or unhappy, or I'm either going to, you know, be chased by you or not. If I've worked out what some of the outcomes might be and I'm okay with them, then I'll go with it. But other than that, you know, so that's really simplifying something, because beyond that, you know, there are a list of all these skills that human beings are meant to have, when you go deeper into not just emotional intelligence, but this, the word that they like to use now is soft skills, things that you have to have. And I've got a list of, I did a show about a radio show, and it was about, I said 29 soft skills. And I was like underestimating it, be quite honest, because it's like you have your main groups, and you have your subgroups, and you have your subgroups of your off the subgroups. So you, of course, you can keep going on and on and on. And I've got a list in front of me, which was like communication here. Emotional intelligence was one of them. Adaptability, time management, decision making, problem solving. See, I went, oh, and I'd only got to number 7, and I had another 29. I thought, what? But all it's saying, just like you mentioned about the toolbox, it's a toolbox that we have, that we go through life. And let's just face it, we have probably got most of those skills to differing degrees. Yeah. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here talking to each other as, you know, valuable, sensible human beings. We just wouldn't have got this far. So we've got those skills, but suddenly someone's put some kind of a price on it, which I decide I have to try and meet. Or someone's given it some importance in that joy. Well, you're either going to be in this job, Joy, or you won't be in this job if you don't do this. And then the other ironic thing I found, Kim, is that it's not like there's any definitive way of measuring it. Okay, so self-assessment. If you give me a sheet and say, and I have to answer it, I will think like you now, Kim. I will definitely start thinking, what does Kim want me to say?
Right.
And I will answer the questions.
Eyes test.
Whatever makes you happy, Kim, I will tick that box so you can say, Joy, you passed. Great. So the measurement of it is interesting. I think that other human beings should be measuring it and holding people accountable to it. And the only measurement should be a bit of kindness. To me, human kindness goes a long, long way. You know, most people, as we've said, there are a few people who don't understand it, know when they're being kind. They know what a face that's had a good experience looks like, and they know what a face that has not had a good experience looks like, because we also mirror each other. Human beings are very clever in that we are meant to be cooperative. So if you're feeling sad and you've got a sad face, Kim, I'll look at you, and I might have come in all smiley into the room, but suddenly my face will fall. I'll start to copy you. I'll say, Kim, what's wrong, you know? Or if I come into the room and I'm unhappy and you're happy, I might lift my spirits a bit more. You know, it's interesting how we copy each other. But I think this whole thing about, you know, why do we need to have that emphasis on emotional intelligence? I think it's probably coming from a good place, and that if you go to work, you do want to be around people that are going to be kind and sensible. That would be nice, wouldn't it? So all the rest of the list is like, do we really need it? And the rest of it is skills,
right,
that would be measured if you need to have that as a proper competency or skill, you know, because I have to make a widget and I have to know, have be able to handle the tool properly. Then you're watching me, by all means, watch me, Kim, see if I get it right. I'm an apprentice now. And as I get better at it, you'll say, you're no longer an apprentice, Joy. You're now a master. I think, oh, thank you, Kim. I've mastered doing that. And you give me a tick. And you pay me at the end of the week as well.
Exactly. I can talk to you forever about this, because I think this is just wonderful, because it's so true. Just you talking about that level of awareness, because that's really, at the end of the day, that's what it is. Whenever we start talking about any type of healing, if we start talking about any type of ability to move forward, we have to first have a level of awareness that something is wrong, or that something is different, or that we're moving in a way that's uncomfortable, or something is giving us anxiety, something is giving us stress. It all starts with awareness that we're feeling stress about that, or that we're angry about that, or that there's a problem with that. There's a level of awareness.
And I was saying, Kim, even the word awareness, okay, if we, again, didn't like that word, because, again, it makes us second guess too much about what does it mean? I would just say, just use the word noticing. I've noticed that the weather's changed. I've noticed that the dog has eaten my dinner. You know, I've noticed something. So it's noticing something, isn't it? And you're right, that ability to notice the change and then to decide whether that's positive or negative. You know,
and we don't have to know what emotional intelligence means in order to notice that something, we just notice that something in the environment, something is different. And then that whole issue of application, just like when you're talking about the apprentice in the mastery. Even if we sat here and had a whole show about emotional intelligence, if I don't know how to apply it,
what's the point?
Or just like we go to school and we've learned all these things. Yes, okay, so I learned, you know, about how, you know, in trigonometry, I learned about things, you know, trapezoids or whatever. I learned about things being congruent and all that. How am I applying that in my everyday life?
And
we'll hear some of the millennials say that too. What does that have to do with anything? Why do I have to know trigonometry? Why do I have to know, you know? And I just say that because a lot of people, you know, are opposed or they're not huge on math. You know, you have people that are math was not my subject. You know, but you have certain
but
things.
But why, Kim, in this day and age, okay, because even me and you, and you're a little bit younger than me. So when you say trigonometry, I'm like, yeah, I remember that. And if you said algebra, I'm going, algebra, oh my God, you know. So the question is, why did we have to learn it? And you'd have thought by now they'd have taken it off the curriculum and be teaching things that people need. So the fact that they might still be teaching this in schools is like, why? So you can see why the education system needs a bit of an overhaul. You know, what kind of skills are they preparing young people for that are going out into the world? And with the world changing now in a very dramatic way, way beyond COVID now, Kim, I mean, artificial intelligence and the use of ChatGPT, which I've been using a lot, you know, kids have to be prepared for a world that's completely different. So all the skills they're being taught in school are redundant. Then really no value. So they should be teaching kids things that they can use. And I think it gets even more serious because with the unemployment figures and people who will probably lose jobs because of machines, you know, teach people the skills that will allow them to be human, to feel valuable. You know, if the machine can do it better, and it's going to take over, then great, you know, let it have it. But also as human beings creating all of these creations, we have to be a bit more responsible, because if we are ultimately blindly walking into, and this is a completely different subject, Kim, but wow, if we are blindly walking into a situation where we are making me, you, and our friends redundant, what are we supposed to do with our time? What are we supposed to do?
All those soft skills, like you said, time management. My thing is, how do we apply? How do these things apply? How do they apply?
But what are we supposed to do?
What am I putting this in for myself?
Kim, if we haven't got a job, or I can't become a business owner because what I'm doing, nobody wants, machines already doing it, where does that put me as a human being? If the real thing with human beings is that we just you need to feel valued, okay, and be doing something which hopefully makes us feel good, but also makes somebody else feel good. If we can't do that ultimately, Kim, then for me, because I live in that world of anxiety, stress, and depression, there's just going to be lots of it. And they already say there's enough of it at the moment, an epidemic proportions. You know, the world that has money is not getting any happier. You know, people who have less know how to be happy. People in the Western world who should know how to be happy and actually probably have more are not happy, and they're getting more and more unhappier. So, you know, if I was going to do some sort of like, you know, wacky correlation between the increase in artificial intelligence and the increase in depression, I would just put the two together. I'm sorry, that's me, but someone's going to prove me wrong.
But that's it. Then, you know, and all of that, that's how we move. You know, we said that we were going to be talking about from stress to strength, but this is exactly the process. Being able, like you said, to notice things and being able to see how certain things apply, and how do they apply in our lives, and how can they help us? How can they be put in that toolbox that we need it for, so that when we get to a place, and we will, because there's never, you know, there's never a space where in time where we're going to get to where we say, oh, you know, I'm stress-free and I'm going to be stress-free forever. No.
than anybody. We need stress. The body needs to be stressed. Anyway, Kim, even from a very simple perspective of getting yourself out of bed, the mere fact of lying down, sleeping for, I don't know, 6 or 7 hours, and then this body has been still and this body now has to move. If we kind of understood the stress that it puts on our whole physiology to get out of bed, to get our heart pumping properly, and the cortisol, which is a part of the normally the stress response, like people know adrenaline and cortisol get triggered. But in order to get out of bed, your cortisol, which is one of your stress hormones, is at its highest point in the morning. People think that's really weird, because you can wake up in the morning, and I can wake up feeling anxious. I think, why am I feeling anxious? But I'm not feeling anxious. I'm noticing the sensations that I have when I feel anxious are similar. My heart's racing. I'm very alert. Because joy, it's saying get out of bed. You need to do something. You need to not lie in bed today. You need to like brush your teeth. You need to do some, you know, shopping. You need to. So all of these things require a little bit of energy and a get up and go and to motivate me. So it's like once you understand a little bit about your own biology or physiology, you can begin to place why the body needs to be stressed sometimes, because there is good stress, Kim. And why some of the other little tiny little micro stresses that happen to us throughout the day that really don't matter, but that can add up to a big, I call it like filling up a cup, filling your cup up with little micro stresses. Of course, eventually the cup will get full. That's all that's happening. But you can't stop stress from happening. You can recognize what stresses you, because we'll have different stress points, me and you, and you do something about it. That's all. You do something to alleviate it. People go running to alleviate it, or just read a book, or do some music, or do some meditation, or do whatever, go for a walk. You know, really all you're doing is finding an antidote. And I love your word cope, finding a coping mechanism or a coping system to bring your stress levels down, to bring it back to normal.
Because the body is a beast. The body is a beast. And we talk about homeostasis, where if you get hot, your body knows to sweat and to release certain things. Or if there's any impact, your body knows how to address that pain or to work on. So there are so many things that sometimes we suppress that our body would naturally do. But just like you think about an example of that is think about our young men and how somebody tell them, oh, suck it up, stop crying. Crying is a natural part of dealing with emotion or pain or something like that. That's one of those things that is natural to our body, and we try to suppress those things. Excuse me. So we have to be careful about allowing things to happen as they do, because our body is conditioned to respond to certain things and to heal in certain ways. We don't cut ourselves and bleed until we bleed out. Something, our body coagulates, and we do certain things that help us to get through certain things. And that's what we have to allow to happen.
Exactly, Kim. And I think it's acknowledging that there are a lot of things happening in our body which are on automatic, which we just don't have to think about. And if we sat down and thought, oh, you must remember to make your heart beat. Oh, you must remember to make your lungs work. Ooh. In fact, you must remember to heal that cut, Joy, otherwise you're going to bleed to death. You know, I'd probably die because I'd forget. You know, so there's lots of things the body does automatically, which are a blessing. So to me, stress as a response to potential danger is a good thing. The fact that things are stressing us out now, which don't require to stress us out. Oh, I've just broken my nail, or I've got an email, or my car's broken down, or, you know, they are stressful in that, you know, you're upset by it. But it's not like being chased by a lion or a tiger, is it? Or it's not like really living in a war-torn country where you've got bombs flying overhead. Now, that is because what's happening, ultimately, this body is designed for survival. So when we feel threatened, your whole body, its whole function is to try and get your brain to work out that you need to save the body and the head together. Like, let's just save us.
Like you said, the key is, just making sure, like you said, that we know this thing. And that we take time to speak those things that we need to apply in order for us to move forward. I think we make it more difficult than it needs to be, because You know, but and that's not to downplay that things are not real that happen to people. And that's where empathy comes in as well, because we're not discounting how someone feels about something. We know that they've had that experience and it's real to them. So we don't want to go, ah, you're being extra. Oh, you're doing the most. Ah, you know, we hear that all the time. We hear those statements. But for that person, it's real. So we're never negating that somebody is feeling the way they're feeling about it. But it's that, okay, you've noticed it. And what can we do? What can we do to apply something to what's happening to make it better? And if I don't know how to do it in and of my own ability, then I need to go and ask somebody.
Oh, Kim, I tell you, we should write that on some cards and we should sell it. And I think it will be a bestseller. Just one page with those four lines on it. And it will be a bestseller because we're saying this is how human beings work.
This is how we live. This is our now. This is our existence. And we have to continue to create our peaceful existence. How do we do that? You know, and it starts here. It starts here. So with that, you know, it's a wonderful segue into how people can get in contact with you if they are interested in or they need help in doing that. Tell people how they can get in contact with you.
Yeah, well, I'm on LinkedIn a lot of the time, and my name is Joy Langley that I use, but you'll find me on LinkedIn, probably Karen Joy Langley. Okay, but if you can't find me on LinkedIn, I do have a website, and it's joylangley.com. So of course, that's the easiest way to find someone, isn't it? Really and truly. But I am on LinkedIn. I don't do the other social media platforms in that way. I have got a Facebook page, but not in that way. So, you know, the best thing is to look for, I would say, joylangley.com, the website. Why not? That would be my first. If I needed to find you, Kim, I would think, oh, Kim, her surname. Like, let's just have a look for that first. That's what I would do.
Right. And it's so funny because my name is so common. Kim Martin is such a common name. You know, I've added the Raymond on there. But yeah, you know, but because I have so many things that are affiliated with Kim Martin, it's hard. So, you know, it's difficult, but people will find me. I tell them, look for me on How Now, look for me on Linktree, you know, things of that nature. But yeah, people will find you when they want to. Yep.
I think I would say to them, Kim, all they need to look for is superstar. And they can't go wrong, really, can they?
She's awesome. She gets to come back every week, okay? It's going to be DeJoy and Kim Jo. We'll see you next week.
Oh, that's so good.
Thank you so
much. You see, I have a very high degree of emotional intelligence and also manipulation, as you can see.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Okay, so look, we know she's a professional, okay? And there you have it. Okay, but one other question, of course, that I ask all of my guests before we depart is, how are you living in this now?
How am I living in the now? Well, I think about that a lot because, especially when there's so many books around the now, and I realize again that it's another word which I don't understand. Mm-hmm. Because my brain is very good at saying, Joy, she's just said the now. Do you understand it? Yes or no? I'm going, I don't know what she's talking about. Do you? I'm having a real internal conversation with myself right now, Kim. So I would say that life is very interesting. And sometimes the reality of it is not what we want. Okay. So the option that I would say the creator God has given us is imagination, which is brilliant. So I can escape sometimes into my own imagination, which is fine by me. I know that the now kind of theories and people that propose that are about you staying in the present moment. But sometimes I don't want to be in the present moment. Yeah. I want to be in my fantasy head somewhere. But if you want to use the word, do I feel grounded? And that's another word that people might or might not understand. But are my feet on the ground? Do I feel in touch with reality? How do I make sure that happens for me? I have people around me who will bring me back down to earth pretty quickly and tell me that I'm not living in the real world and tell me that I'm fantasizing. So I've got people around me who I allow to do that. Okay, that's how I stay grounded. But I quite like not living in the now, but it's living in the now, but I'm using my imagination. I'm creative. I'm a creative person. So I spend a lot of time in my head making things up and, you know, I just love it. You know, in my head, I've got wings, I can fly, you know.
I
Yeah, so sweet, isn't it? Yeah, I'm not. And then every now and then I'm very grounded. I'm very sensible. I'm very logical. You know, very rational.
I like that. Living in that fantasy. So, hey, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I like to go to, hey, I have wings myself, you know. You can do all kinds of things, like you said, in that space. And there's nothing wrong with that. There is a, you know, even though it's your name, there's a joy in that. It's a joy in being in that space. So I love that. I love that. And everybody's going to have their different way that they're living in the now. But I always like to ask my guests that because, you know, it gives people an idea or, like you said, an understanding of what now means. They're like, oh, that's what she means when she says that. Oh, that's what that person, you know, perceives it. And everybody perceives it in a different way. I get different answers all the time. I never get the same answer twice because people have a different perspective on what that means. And it's what it means to you. So I love that you answered that so beautifully and so honestly, like, yeah, what does that mean? What is she talking about? It's your perception, you know? And that's why we hear a lot about mindset. But it starts in our mind and it's unique to us. So,
yeah. I would encourage people to, like children, be curious and challenge. And unfortunately, children are told to stop being curious in that way and to stop challenging. But really, I would say adults listening, those are your superpowers. Curiosity will lead you to some really interesting places, and challenging the things that you don't understand will help to elevate you, be quite honest. My main fear, as I said at the beginning, was about I had to look intelligent on my beliefs. So therefore, I wouldn't question you, Kim. If you said a word that I didn't understand, I wouldn't say, oh, by the way, Kim, what does that mean? No, because that might make me look stupid. So I've got to pretend that I understand what you're saying, Kim. But I'm of an age now where I don't do that. And it's a fear of looking stupid. But I'm thinking, well, you know, the saying is that you can either look stupid or you can be enlightened, isn't it? I mean, once I've looked stupid, I'll be enlightened. So I've got no problem with stopping and saying, do you know what? I don't know what this word emotional intelligence means. I know I live in this world. I don't know what that word living in the now means. I've seen it on so many books. I've seen it written down. But what does it mean? You know, so you have to be brave enough to say, I don't know what that means. But that's from a perspective that once you get the answer, you'll be enlightened.
There you go. You're enlightened. You're not stupid. You're curious to know what's going on around you. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. And with that, I am going to say thank you so much for being here with me, Joy. It has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. And as I've said to some former guests of mine, you are now a part of the How Now family. You are always welcome to come back and to tell us what is going on in your now, because what's happening today, tomorrow, 2 weeks, 2 minutes, 2 years from now may not be what's happening at this moment. So you're always welcome to come back and let us know what's going on in your world. I wish you the best in all that you do. And again, like I said, we'll see you again another time. We're not done. This is going to be the Joy and Kim show, because you already said, she said, I'm a superstar. So, you know, you got to keep company with other superstars.
Of course. The stars have to hang out together.
That's what I say. They align. That's what we did.
It's been an absolute pleasure being on your show. I didn't know where any of these conversations were going to go. And I must admit, they've gone all over the shop. But that's what happens when you talk to me, Kim. You can get anything. It's a surprise.
You're going to get that every week with me as well. So like I said, just come on in, have a seat, strap in if you need to. And hopefully you'll walk out of here a little bit wiser, a little bit more in tuned or knowledgeable as a result of the experience. So again, thank you so much for being here.
My absolute pleasure.
Yes, and that will do it for this edition of the How Now podcast, where we talk about how to live in the now. And until I see you the next time, I say peace.